Welcome to Fronteras, a program that explores issues at the border and beyond through the lens of arts, culture, and history. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Univision celebrated its 70th anniversary in 2025. The nation's largest provider of Spanish language content got its start in San Antonio. Raul Cortez founded KCOR AM in 1946. It was the first all-Spanish language radio station in the U.S. owned and operated by a Latino. Cortez expanded his broadcast empire to launch KCOR TV in 1955. It was the foundation upon which the Spanish International Network, later Univision, was built. Raul Cortez and his son-in-law Emilio Nicolás are just two of the pioneers who broke barriers and fought the odds to establish Latino Americans as an important audience for advertisers and politicians. Other characters with exciting yet very descriptive nicknames played a part in this story, including Mexican business magnate Emilio Azcárraga Vidaurreta, also known as El León, the Lion, and his more extravagant son Emilio Azcárraga Milmo, El Tigre, the Tiger. Javier Marin has written about the evolution of Spanish language media and the colorful characters who worked behind the scenes to make it happen in the book Live from America, How Latino TV Conquered the U.S.
You being in San Antonio and knowledgeable about this part of the story, I would do a comparison of Emilio Nicolás Sr. as being Samuel Morse, the inventor of the Morse code and the telegraph. So he was the first one to own a TV station. He couldn't do it by himself. It was very small. It was losing money from the first years. And then Emilio Azcárraga Vidaurreta, El León, it was named, was the one who came with the resources. The whole story is in the book on how he convinced Emilio Nicolás. Emilio Nicolás Sr. decided to sell some shares to Azcárraga Vidaurreta with the purpose of expanding the operation. So I will compare Emilio Nicolás to the, you know, the inventor of the Morse code and the telegraph, and then Azcárraga Vidaurreta, together with René Anselmo and other individuals with their resources and a lot of financial and legal creative tools that I describe in the book. And so I will compare that group with Guglielmo Marconi, which in early 1900 developed a transatlantic telegraphic system that expanded the whole code Morse utilization. I don't know if it makes sense what I said, but that's a good way of reflecting what happened at the beginning. So in 1955, Emilio Nicolás Sr. decided to start the TV station through the radio that his father-in-law, Cortés, had from the 40s and started the KCOR. René Anselmo, he was an employee of the Azcárragas in Mexico, and he was sent to the U.S. because he was a U.S.-born person. He was born in the suburbs of Boston. His name, original name, was Reynold Vincent Anselmo. I actually explain a funny part of how he was named René. The Azcárraga son told him, Reynold, you're going to be called here Ray, and the only Ray here is my dad, so you will be called René from now on.
Because Ray means king in Spanish.
Correct.
There's only one king.
Correct. And the reason why they sent René Anselmo is because he was an American citizen, and there was a law at that time that was there was a restriction for foreigners to own more than 25% of a national TV network. And so I also describe with details how they did that through convertible loans. And so the business creativity of León Azcárraga was an essential tool to do the expansion. And the knowledgeable technological way of thinking of René Anselmo to expand buying a small TV, low-power TV stations in different parts of the country, it was also very important. And then Emilio Nicolás Sr. was key on the activism part through Congress to pass the bill to integrate the UHF and VHS technology in TV outlets, because before it was also very difficult to watch SIN because it was on a level of channel numbers. There is a technicality explained in the book.
If I can interrupt, I remember people of a certain age, perhaps ourselves, remember the TV set having two knobs on it. One was the UHF and one was the VHF. All those clicks, and you can go through right. all the channels that had nothing. And the signals were very weak on those. And that's what you're referring to.
Exactly. So Nicolás Sr. was key through the Congress rep, Henry González, to get that bill to make an obligation to all the TV manufacturers to include the switch from UHF to VHF.
And Henry B. González was a congressman from right here in San Antonio, so there's that other connection here as well.
Correct. SIN took an important part of his first election in the 60s because Azcárraga brought Cantinflas to San Antonio to do campaign with González, and Lyndon Johnson also endorsed him. And so the first time that is documented the role of Spanish media being part of a political campaign was that election of González. And he never lost an election, never. He won that one, and he was the congressman until 2 years before he died.
Running through this book really here is the passion that the business owners and the people who were in front of and behind the cameras that they had in presenting Spanish language media to the Latino population, whether they were U.S. born or immigrant, they had that passion. They knew it was an underrepresented market. And it was also a way to formulate opinions. And you were mentioning politics. And what I thought was really interesting was sort of the backstage kind of partnerships that the station owners of SAEN, of the Spanish International Network, and Ronald Reagan had, for example. I scratch your back and you scratch mine. They had sort of this very interesting sort of back and forth. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Ronald Reagan was the governor of California, and there was an event that ended up violently. The SIN news coordinator, Ruben Salazar, in L.A., killed.
Vietnam, anti-Vietnam Correct. Protest.
Anti-Vietnam protest from the Hispanics and African-American communities. So Governor Reagan, together with his staff, decided to search. How was that successful march convocated? And also to try to restrain a little bit the noise of the killing of Salazar. That's when he and Governor Reagan heard about SIN, contacted the owners. At that time, he contacted Fran Fauce, which was another American individual, minority shareholders of the L.A. station. And that's when the relationship started. And that evolved into, you know, when he became a presidential candidate, the first time he lost in the primary, the second time Reagan won, and then he won the presidency. And that relationship was key, especially during 10 years of a litigation that is also described in the book that ended up forcing the sale of Azcárraga and the former owners of SIN to Hallmark Arts.
Yeah, which is itself a very unusual thing that I don't think many people are familiar with. Just the many ways that that one lawsuit you're referencing that took 10 years to resolve. And there were many people who were looking to bid to buy SIN, the Spanish International Network. And of all the companies that launched the winning bid, it was Hallmark Cards, which you would not expect to be a major player in media, particularly in Spanish language media. But can you explain how Hallmark Cards actually helped launch the brand that we know now as Univision?
Yes, I think we have to go back a little bit and understand how did they ended up owning Spanish International Network. There was a strong relationship between the whole family and George H.W. Bush, who was the vice president of Reagan, and he was already on the polls to become the president after Reagan. Then the shareholders of Hallmark Cards, the family hall, was a big financiers of the Bush campaign. But as you said, there were many people behind SIN, because SIN was the fourth network. The Azcárraga and Nicolás Sr. found a way to build a fourth network. Because remember, at that time, when we didn't have cables, there was no internet, no other. There were only three big networks, ABC, CBS, and NBC. And SIN was, you know, a fourth network. So Hallmark Cards ended up being the buyer. And there is another essential individual in the whole transactions of the sales that kept a station as a Spanish speaking, which was Judge Mariana Falser from California. She was a heroine because she decided to put in the sales conditions to keep the Spanish for the next, I believe, 17 years. Because Rupert Murdoch wanted the SIN assets and license, but not for the Spanish-speaking market. Ted Turner wanted the license, not for the Spanish-speaking market. And Hallmark Cards ended up buying it, and they decided to try to, I call it in the book, desmexicanizar. How do you say?
Demexicanize?
Desmexicanize the channel. So try to separate anything that had to do with the Azcárragas and Televisa Mexico. And one of the first things is to put a president who was not Mexican, Joaquin Blaya, who was from Chile, and also an American person who was Steve Grimes, who was the guy who started ESPN as an executive, as a CEO, and changed the name. And that's when they found Univision, one of the brands that they, actually, the Azcárraga before SIN was changed to Univision. They wanted to change the name to Univisa, but the owners, including Nicolás Sr., never allowed that name. They wanted to keep SIN. But then Hallmark Cards decided just to change SIN, just to try to change the past. They had already a brand registered called Univision, and that's the one they decided. But as I explained in the book, it was mainly a financial decision to have a holding. So Hallmark Cards put some money to buy the station. They incurred in loans to buy the station. And then under the name of Univision, they issued bonds to just repay themselves.
Javier Marin is the author of Live from America, How Latino TV Conquered the U.S. When we come back, the Spanish international network that became Univision was sold to Hallmark Cards in the 1980s. The greeting card giant knew its mission going forward.
They had to keep the Spanish as a language, and they were eager to Americanize.
Our conversation continues next on Fronteras.
It's one thing to love public radio, but it's a special thing to support it. Consider this. If you've got a car you don't need anymore, or you've got one that's simply too expensive to repair, arrange to donate it to TPR. It's easy for you, pickup is free, and it could be worth hundreds of dollars in support. Thanks in advance. Here's how to get started. Go to tpr.careasy.org to learn more.
Welcome back to Fronteras. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Spanish language media has become commonplace on U.S. TV through channels like Univision, Unimas, Telemundo, Galavision, and it's expanded into Spanish language cable and satellite packages and streaming services like ViX. Lots of wheelings and dealings went on behind the scenes over the last 70 years to keep Latino viewers in the U.S. connected to their culture with news and entertainment. When the pioneering Spanish International Network was ordered by a judge to be sold in the 1980s, it had been eyed by media magnates Ted Turner and Rupert Murdoch. SIN was sold to the unlikely bidder, Hallmark Cards, in 1987. Hallmark changed the name of the network to Univision and named Joaquin Blaya as its new CEO. Under Blaya, the network experienced transformational growth with shows like El Show de Cristina and Sábado Gigante. Javier Marin has written about the evolution of the Spanish language media landscape in the book Live from America, How Latino TV Conquered the U.S. He says that Hallmark was determined to keep its Latino audiences central to Univision's mission.
The new owners, they had to keep the Spanish as a language, and they were eager to Americanize. So the first instructions to Blaya were, we want an opera in Spanish, we want a Grammy in Spanish. We want Entertainment Weekly in Spanish. There is a lady, Rosita Peru, who was also key on the programming changes from SIN to Univision. And some of those instructions worked, but because Cristina had a very, her own editorial style, Latina style, and it was respected by the owners because it was being successful on the ratings. And Don Francisco with Sábado Gigante was also, managing the change of the typical musical magazine and he discovered that, you know, the Saturdays, who was a dead day for TV, he created those 3 hours, marathonic 3 hours of musical magazine that was very successful. So, but the management that had nothing to do with the ownership, and the ownership was only eager to financially make it viable, but it was also very hard to make it financially viable because they started with a huge debt in their balance sheet.
Yeah, this book really does detail a lot of the financial struggles that, you know, Univision and even Telemundo eventually, when it came on board, the struggles that they faced in trying to make it in the U.S. market. But I want to go back to, you just dropped the name of Rosita Peru, and we want to mention that she was a very important figure. She was the first woman executive vice president in the history of Hispanic television. And Univision and SIN on their own were also very important in bringing women into a place where they were breaking glass ceilings of their own. Here in San Antonio, a lot of people know Marta Tijerina. She was one of the first news anchors, held an interview show here in San Antonio, still very active in the community. And you mentioned Cristina Saralegui. I mean, I think that network really played a really important part in elevating women in positions behind the scenes and in front of the camera that had not been seen before, even in the United States. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes, the role of Rosita Peru was, as you perfectly explained, key on the success and expansion and growth of Univision and first on a Spanish International Network. She was a famous singer and then became a producer of her own show. And then she became a good sales executive at the station. She was one of the first executives who brought, the big names, the big brands of Anheuser-Busch and McDonald's and some banks to buy advertising. She could have been the CEO of any big TV network in the U.S., but just because being a woman, she was not. But her role was essential. And she was, I think, the only executive survivor of the different ownerships from the SIN to Univision Hallmark Cards to Perenchio, Cisneros, Azcárraga, Triumvirat, when she decided to resign.
Maria Elena Salinas, also a very important figure in front of the camera. She co-hosted for many years the Spanish language newscast on Univision with Jorge Ramos, who no longer is on the network as well. So let's talk a little bit about sort of the news angle that these stations took. You mentioned Ted Turner again earlier. A lot of folks wanted to be the CNN in Español. And can you talk a little bit about how Univision and Telemundo were able to achieve that goal and bring Spanish language news, not just through their local newscasts, but nationally from coast to coast?
The real pioneers and discoverers of the importance of a Spanish newscast in the U.S. was SIN. So they had an entire news staff. So I always say that my personal opinion is that, you know, the opera, the Sábado Gigante, Despierta América, comedies, Chapulín, El Chavo, were important. But the news was also very important, very appealing to the audience. So they created this national cast out of Miami. Marilena Salinas and Jorge Ramos were, by chance, the anchors. There is a chapter where I explained a problem that happened between Cubans and Mexicans in the station in Miami, and the whole news staff was mainly Cuban, resigned. And Ramos and Salinas were the only left in the newsroom, and that's how they decided to put both as anchors of the national newscast. For 30 years, they were together. I think it's in the entire TV industries, I think that's the couple that have been the longest on a newscast. But then the Ted Turner CNN success, emerging TV news for 24 hours, changed the whole news industry. And Telemundo was being created in the 80s as well, at the same time when the brand changed from SIN to Univision. And Telemundo was completely owned by U.S. people, English-speaking executive team. There was only one Hispanic, Carlos Barba. And Barba, because of financial relationship between the owners of Telemundo and their financiers, was the same financier of Turner, they decided to start a newscast together with CNN. So the first CNN in Espanol was CNN and Telemundo. The same MTV Latino started with Telemundo with a weekly show called MTV Internacional with Daisy Fuentes. Daisy Fuentes was the weather girl, the station in New Jersey that also then belonged to Telemundo. So it's a fascinating story of how the news was so important for Latinos. And then, you know, after a financial debacle of Telemundo, CNN pulled out of their partnership with Telemundo and created CNN en Español, which at the beginning, it wasn't a channel. It was just a syndicated program sent to different stations in Latin America.
So a lot has changed in the 70 years since KCOR-TV went on the air in San Antonio. Right now, we're in a completely different world where a lot of people are now getting their news digitally on demand. And you do touch a bit on that in your book. Can you explain to us how the Spanish language media companies have evolved to meet those changes?
Well, in 2007, Univision was sold for $13 billion. In 2002, Telemundo was sold for $2 billion. So the Spanish-speaking media market was already important in value. $13 billion is the biggest transaction in the Hispanic company in the U.S., still being. That was 2007. I'm saying this is because how big was the goals of or the vision of investor, mainly American financial investors and on the side of Univision and NBC Universal on the side of Telemundo. So the evolution of media when the streaming came in with the Netflix, I mean, remember, they just started in 2007. That same year that Univision was sold is when the whole internet started to explode and still making a lot of changes. They still being the two largest media conglomerates in Spanish, but they are living the same changes and dilemmas that main media companies are living. Telemundo is under the umbrella of NBC Universal. So anything that will happen on the evolution with the internet and the digital spectrum, it will affect Telemundo. But at the same time, the big platforms, Meta, you know, the Netflix of the world and the streaming companies are taking a big chunk of the audience and the market. What I foresee, personally speaking, this is not fact because my book is a nonfiction based on facts. What I foresee is definitely some sort of alliances, a merge, consolidation of know-how of the market, and Univision is still in the hands of independent financial investors. So I think Spanish-speaking audience will be here forever, even though there are cycles, you know, there are cycles when Spanish is being attacked and there are groups, you know, against the use of Spanish. But it didn't work when we were, you know, 10 million, 5 million people. Now we're 60 million people. So the Spanish-speaking market will still there. The distribution of content is evolving and changing every year with different, right now, our influencers and podcasts and streaming. But radio and TV and broadcast is still the drivers of advertising money. And the platforms are not very well savvy so far. And there is still one big station, I would say, available for those type of alliances, which is Televisa Univision. And I think their merge between the Mexican and the U.S. Company is being prepared for those changes in the future, alliances with big platforms. Telemundo is under the hands of NBC, so it will depend on what NBC owners decide.
Javier Marin has owned Spanish language media outlets in the U.S. and co-owns the Tiempo Media Company in Washington, D.C. Marin is the author of Live from America, How Latino TV Conquered the U.S. Fronteras editors are Dan Katz and Yvette Benavides. Charanga Cakewalk composed our theme music. Hear past episodes at tpr.org and on the Fronteras podcast. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Thanks for listening.